Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Belinda Merritt and Paul Hertz.
Paul, as one of our resident music experts, has been largely responsible for preparing today's show. In the first half of the show, we are going to enjoy Musica Antiqua. And just in case you are not familiar with them, here is something for you to enjoy. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and this morning we are enjoying Musica Antiqua. This is Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Belinda Merritt and Paul Hertz, and we're very fortunate to have Dr. Carl Bliley here with us this morning. He's the director of the Iowa State University Musica Antiqua, a music ensemble and devoted to the performing music of the Middle Ages and Renaissance. He's been a member of the Musica Antiqua since its founding in 1967, and I think you're also the director, too. You're also Professor Emeritus of Musicology at Iowa State and Director of Music at the Collegiate United Methodist Church.
That is correct, yes.
Musica Antiqua is one of the music groups performing in the 2015 ISU Madrigal Dinners that are coming up on Friday, January 16, and Saturday, January 17th. And I think the tickets are on sale for that now.
Yes, they are.
So welcome to Local Talk, Dr. Bliley, and thank you so much for coming and joining us. Can you tell us what is the Musica Antiqua movement?
Well, there is a general movement throughout the world about early music, but not only early music, but early music performed on instruments that are recreated from models that are found in museums. And we started this. I came back from the University of Minnesota, and I found a group of three or four people playing early instruments, and I was given the directorship of it, and I knew absolutely nothing about early music, at least as far as the instrumental parts are. But over the many, many years, we have learned pretty much how to at least control some of these strange instruments.
Where did this movement start?
Oh, the movement around it as far as playing early music has been around since early music, but there are very few universities in this country that have musical groups that play medieval and Renaissance music. There are a lot of
Iowa State is a little bit unusual in that?
Iowa State is quite unusual, yes. In fact, we were called the University of Iowa to give a workshop over there several years ago. We started with Dr. Parks. Uh-huh. And Dan Zaffirano, uh-huh, and Carl Hamilton. Ed Weiss, you may remember maybe Ed Weiss.
Can you describe him a little bit to people that were not fortunate enough to know him?
Well, Ed was a staple of WI, and he came out on the evening, this was a Saturday evening, dressed up as some macabre creature introducing the movies at that time. And so Ed was a good friend of all three of those people, and he persuaded them to purchase a few instruments for us. And so out of the president's office, we had a sackbut, we had a recorder, and I don't remember what the other instrument was, but it was a very, very small group.
And you decided to start playing old, medieval and Renaissance music at that time?
I was forced into it, yes. Nobody else would do it.
It was Ed Weiss's idea?
It was Ed Weiss's idea, definitely, and he was the one who got the early funding and continued getting funding from the university.
Was Ed actually a member of the music department?
Oh, yes. He played lute. Uh-huh. He played lute. He had several lutes in his collection as well as a harpsichord, but we don't use a harpsichord in our performances.
So what kind of research goes into performing music like this?
What kind of what?
Research.
You have to go into libraries. Most of this information, the music is available through the Library of Congress or through interlibrary loan, and then we use that. We often play from original manuscripts, which is a little bit difficult, with no bar lines and only one part and in different clefs, the alto tenor clef, that most people are not used to reading.
When you say original manuscript, what does that really mean?
Original manuscripts mean that things that are in the library, the collection, that tell us about the instruments, that show us pictures of the instruments, that describe the instruments, and then builders, and very few builders, because this is not a product that is sold very often. Most of these builders, by the way, are in Germany. Mm-hmm. Then they look at, they take the dimensions of the instruments, and then they recreate authentic replicas. So if you look at them, you would say, that's an old instrument. It is an old instrument, but it's a replica of an old instrument.
So have you had instruments built for you?
Oh, we've had many instruments built.
Really?
By the way, we started with three of them, and we now probably have 75 or so, with probably a value of well over $100,000.
Wow. So I think you brought a few, so later on in the discussion, maybe you can describe them a little bit.
I brought a few, yes, of the...
Name something that surprises people when they listen to Musica Antiqua for the first time. What kind of responses do you get?
Most of the responses come from our double reed instruments. And one of them that surprises is the Rauschpfeife. And that means noise pipe, or it could mean the person who is playing it is drunk. And it makes a horrendous noise, and when it's first heard, that's what people experience. It's total surprise. But then the real surprise comes from the bladder pipe, which
bladder
actually
pipe.
Is made from a pig's bladder. And the bladder is extended. I guess you can extend it or enlarge the bladder. And then you put it on the end of an instrument, and you blow through a hole that's in the bladder pipe, and the air goes into the instrument itself where there's a double reed. And you can imagine the jokes that could be made about playing on the bladder pipe.
Do you know when this instrument was actually used?
Oh, this we have pictures of it back in the 16th century, and even before that, sometime the 14th century.
Orchestras or music groups in the 14th and 15th centuries would use bladder pipes.
They would use bladder pipes somewhere, yes. Basically, I think it's an instrument for outdoor dancing, to accompany outdoor dancing.
Uh-huh. Amazing. So this really requires a particular mindset to be playing this music and doing this research.
You have to have a sense of humor. And we have found many, many pieces that are very, very humorous, many scatological. And in fact, we have a concert that we have never done yet called our Triple X Pornography Concert. And if you listen to the words, anything you hear today is very, very mild. One of these days we'll do that. Fortunately, they're all in foreign languages.
So
no, I should get back. There are a lot of English rounds that you would not want to sing in the schools.
So who actually made music in the medieval times?
Well, these were people who were associated with the courts. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the courts could only afford the music, the instruments, and the performers. So when we play at the Madrigal Dinner, we're at the court of James I, King James I of England, and Anne, the Queen. And so he calls for his musicians, and we come up. And this is very authentic.
As the musicians, are you actually servants, or what are you?
We probably would be called courtiers.
Uh-huh.
And we're part of the court with a special function.
But you live in the court and you provide music.
We live there. In fact, the introduction piece to this program was a lute. Mm-hmm. And the lute player was a very rare player who only played for the king or, in the case of the Madrigal Dinner, the king's guests. And that's the only time he would perform because this was a very specialized and very difficult to play instrument.
It was a very respected instrument.
Oh, very highly respected, yes. Mm-hmm. The thing is with the lute, you play a guitar today and you hum and strum and you play chum, 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 the chords. When you play a lute, you are playing several different lines at the same time. It's polyphonic, so the fingers are each playing a different line of music and you have to keep those in your mind. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's a very, very hard instrument to play.
So what did you actually teach at the university when you weren't playing with Musica Antiqua?
I started as a theory teacher, and I started as an organ teacher. And then I wound up as a historian and then the director of this group as well.
Tell us a little bit about the other people in the group.
Well, one of the person is Dee Dreesen. I believe he was just down here not too long ago with the Bell Choir interview.
That's right.
And she has been with the group ever since almost the beginning. She took a few years off at Geneseo, I believe, over in Illinois, but then she couldn't resist and came back to perform. She's a handbell director at the Collegiate Methodist Church. He's retired now from the library. Another person is Alan Sponheimer. Alan Sponheimer has been with us right from the very beginning, although he went to Texas to get a degree for a few years and then came back. He plays practically every instrument, the sackbut, which is a right trombone. He plays the serpent, which is an instrument that looks exactly like a serpent, but it the tuba took its place. He plays the recorders, he plays crumhorns, he plays hurt and shawmai. But I think one of his biggest accomplishments is the website that he has.
Uh-huh.
And he has a website that is incredible with all kinds of information. Harvard, Princeton all use this website for their early music programs.
This is the website for Musica Antiqua?
It's a website. All you would need to Google is just to Google Musica Antiqua of Ames, probably. There are several Musica Antiqua groups. And in almost every instrumental category that we have, if you Google that particular category, Musica Antiqua will come up first.
It's a very nice website, too. There's photographs of the group going back all the way to a time when Alan was a student. You could see that he was in his 20s.
That's right. We're not called Musica Antiqua for no reason whatsoever.
Well, let's play a little bit more music, and then we'll go back to talking about this really, really interesting group. You're listening to KHOI, and we're talking about Musica Antiqua. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're enjoying the music of Musica Antiqua today, and Dr. Carl Bliley is here with us. Dr. Carl Bliley is the director of the Musica Antiqua group, which features music from the medieval and the Renaissance, both times, with what sounds to me and what you've described as somewhat extinct instruments that are brought back to life and enjoyed again for their colorful sounds and the unusual variety of what sounds can make.
I think you hit the word variety very well. There are many, many different kinds of sounds. The same sounds as you divide music into instruments into today, the flutes, the woodwinds, the double reeds, the brass, the percussion, they're all there. I must say that there are very few makers who make these instruments anymore. You cannot buy them at the local Target store. In fact, many of them that we have are irreplaceable. The builders have either gone out of existence or there hasn't been anybody to take their place.
You've had relationships over time, I assume, with people that have made these instruments for you.
We have close relationships, and we get them through an antique sound workshop in Massachusetts. And what they do is they take the instrument itself, and then they finish it up, refurbish it, because the builder doesn't have the expertise to make it into a musical instrument. So we then take it to the antique sound workshop, and then they fix it up, tune it up, as much as you can tune an instrument like that up, and then bring it to us.
It's very adventurous.
Yeah.
Did we talk about everybody that's in the group?
No, we missed a few people.
Who did we leave out?
Actually, you left out about 10 people. But,
oh.
we've done different things with different groups over the years. Steve Kelleher, in fact, the first piece you heard, the lute piece that opened up this program, was done by Steve Kelleher, who's from Fort Dodge, and he plays the gamba, he plays the lute, and he plays the rebec, mostly the string instruments in our group. He comes down and practices with us.
Do you practice often?
Not very often.
Once a year, twice a year, ten times a year?
We usually get together right before a performance. And for the matter of good, I don't probably know. Well, we'll practice with the group for sessions and things like that. But we know the music. Most of it is memorized. So we can walk around the audience and show them the instruments up close, which is, helps the rapport between the two groups.
So is this fun, doing this?
Occasionally. No, it's quite fun. You think, oh, my goodness, I have to get dressed up. I have to get all these instruments out. I have to blow them. I have to get them warmed up. But then once you get on the stage, I think the performance takes over and I would say every one of us is a ham, very much of a ham, in particular when you work on the audience and you see the surprise that they have of the sound. You say, woo! And that's a great deal of fun, yeah.
Where do you perform?
We have performed, I think, as far west as Colorado and as far east as I know. We've been in Chicago several times. We've been down in Oklahoma. We've recorded for a history book that was written by an Iowan. And we've done three recordings, as you've heard here. Mm-hmm. And just for Madrigal dinners, concerts, international, we've done some international symposia, weddings. Yeah, we even played for Fred Hoiberg's brother's wedding out in the quad out of the university.
Well, most of the people in the group have been in the group for a long time. Are you adding new people, or are you concerned about people timing out?
Well, we haven't added new people. When you add new people, then you have to readjust your repertoire. And it's much easier just to go with the people you know will do the work and will be available and are reliable.
So do you think this group will go on for a long time yet? Or this is really a treasure in a way. Dr. Lilly was saying earlier that Iowa State is actually very unusual, that it has a music antiqua group and that it's kind of a treasure.
I'm not getting any younger. And when you realize this group was formed in, 1967? You can do the addition.
Yeah.
And see.
You must know each other very well by now and must kind of know the songs and people.
Maybe too well.
Maybe too well. Should we hear one more song before we go on?
The boar's head in hand bear I, bedecked with bays and rosemary. And I pray you, my masters, be merry, quotestis in convivio.
Caputa prite ferro, redens laes domino.
The boar's head, as I understand, is the rarest dish in all this land. Which thus bedecked with a gay garland, let us servire cantico.
Caputa prite ferro, redens laes domino.
A steward hath provided this in honor of the king of bliss, which on this day to be served is in reginentia trio.
Caputa prite ferro, redens laes domino.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and this morning we are talking about Musica Antiqua. We're here with Dr. Carl Bliley, who's from the ISU Music Department and also the director of Musica Antiqua. We were listening to some of the carols that one might hear at the Madrigal dinner the Musica Antiqua will be performing at, that's the 16th and the 17th of January.
That's correct.
And the tickets are on sale now for that. This is also another tradition at Iowa State that's been going on long enough for me to remember as a teenager. The Musica Antiqua performs there. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Tell us again, whose court is this?
This is the court of James I of England and Queen Anne. Donald Simonson is the king, and there's usually a student who is chosen then as the queen. What you heard previously was the wassail song, which is part of that when the wassail ball is brought in and the toast is made to the king himself. I do need to go back and say that associated with us in a tenuous way is the Music Men. And the Music Men is a group of five singers, male singers, who perform quite often around the area. They're a well-known group, and they will be part. And they occasionally sing along with us as well. And we have a couple more players, a serpent player, Paul Anderson, and we have a few more. So I say it's a group that grows depending on what the occasion is, how many people are needed. And so at the Madrigal dinner, we all are there.
Well, that's kind of a summit of musical summit.
That is a conglomeration of everything possible in the instrumental world, including the trumpet players, the three trumpet players who play those long horns for the heralds and to call attention to the various events.
So this is the court of King James
the first, of England. Yes.
Of England. This is a dinner that he's holding. And why King James first of England? How did he end up being the host?
I think a lot of it comes because of the enormous amount of music that came out of that court.
He was a music lover.
He was a music lover, and a man by the name of Ravenscroft collected many, many, many different pieces that can be done. A lot of them are madrigals are in English, and so that helps as well. The one we heard previously was an Italian piece, but there would be Italian, French, German pieces done as well. But I think that's probably why there's such a wealth of music that mm-hmm. associated with the court of Queen Elizabeth mm-hmm. and the court of King James I.
And this is a dinner that he's holding for the new year or for Christmas, or what is the occasion of the dinner?
The dinner is just a celebration. In our situation, it's a celebration of the new year.
Celebration of the new year. The people at the dinner are presumably noblemen?
They are presumably.
So he wouldn't be inviting
peons? He wouldn't allow his lute player to play for the lower classes.
I see. Okay, so one is a noble person at this dinner.
And also another thing that happens during the dinner is that people from the audience mm-hmm. are invited to participate in a play that is done or in some of the other activities, much to sometimes the embarrassment of the person who has been chosen, usually chosen by somebody in the court who can take a joke pretty well.
So bring your sense of humor.
Bring your sense. Oh, you need to have a sense of humor, yes.
How historically accurate is the meal?
I think it's fairly historically accurate. The pork producers of Iowa do provide the pork for the meal, and then there's plum pudding at the end. There's vinaigrette dressing. There's a porridge, I believe, some kind mm-hmm. of porridge and bread. It's guillotine bread. I don't know why you call it guillotine, except it breaks apart very quickly or very easily. And so it's an authentic – as much as you can prepare for that many people, an authentic dinner.
And while the – servers are serving you, they are also performing and singing?
The servers do not perform. Now, the servers are with the staff at the union.
So the musicians perform while
the – But the musicians go around, yes.
While the food is being served?
Well, after it's being served, so we don't run into the servers. And then there's all kinds of things. We take our instruments out, usually privately, a different instrument, and play at the various tables. And then the groups of singers, small groups of singers, go out and also perform. And then there's a jester and the dancers as well. So it's quite a show. And it's held in the Great Hall at the university. And you know how beautiful that hall mm-hmm. is with the high ceiling. It's a perfect place for a dinner. So it's very disappointing to go to other dinners in other places and see mm-hmm. just a plain old building there. But when we get into there, you get the feeling that this is really a court.
Yeah, normally the castle would have high ceilings like mm-hmm. that and kind of
thing. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's listen to the Flaming Pudding Carol. You would also hear this during the dinner, right?
Okay, yeah.
Come bring with a noise, my many, many boys, the Christmas pudding, the flaming hospitality. Busy, I'll be free.
Clinging now with good cheer, cut the white loaf here, the while the meat is a-shredding. For the rare mince pie and the plum stands by to fill the paste that's a-kneading. Come bring with a noise, my merry, merry boys, the Christmas pudding a-flaming. Hospitality, pity all, be free and eat to your heart's desiring.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're here with Dr. Carl Bliley, who is the director of the Musica Antiqua, which will be performing this January 16th and 17th at the Memorial Union at the Madrigal Dinner. And they will be performing at the court of King James I, to which you would be going to as well if you join the Madrigal Dinner. And the tickets are on sale now for the Madrigal Dinner. This is a tradition that's been going on also for a long time at Iowa State, as well as Musica Antiqua, and really celebrates the medieval and Renaissance periods. And there's a number of other musical groups, as well as Musica Antiqua, that are performing at the Madrigal Dinner.
Yes.
I have a list here. The Iowa State Singers, the Music Men that you mentioned, the Orchesis, two dancers, and the Madrigal Dinner alumni. What is the Madrigal Dinner alumni?
This is the 50th year of the Madrigal Dinner, and alumni from the past have been invited to come. And so they will be there Saturday night, and this is an extraordinarily talented group of people. They're coming from as far away as California.
Wow.
just to attend this 50th anniversary. So I imagine the singing on Saturday night is going to be quite spectacular.
Majestic, yeah.
One problem, Saturday night is sold out.
Oh, okay. Well, for good reason, apparently.
Oh, yeah, for very good. In fact, it was sold out quite several weeks ago. I know they will be rehearsing before so that mm-hmm. they will be able to sing as a group mm-hmm. along with the Iowa State Singers.
Quite a gala event. There are tickets still available for the other night.
For Friday night,
Friday night, yeah. And maybe this would be a good time to talk a little bit about what you brought with you.
One of the unusual instruments, and as you look at it, you can see what
this
it looks like.
This looks like a umbrella handle without an umbrella.
Exactly right. Or the letter J, if I turn it the right
J.
way.
Yeah, it's a very pretty umbrella handle with holes down the sides of the neck.
It is made of sycamore maple, and it's curved just like the letter J, and it's called a krumhorn, or I guess the Germans would call it krumhorn, with the long rolled R, and it means curved horn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a krumhorn. It's probably one of our most popular instruments. It has a sound, a buzzy sound, where you don't put your lips on the reed, but the reed is inside of a cap, and you just blow into the cap. I'll play a few notes on that.
Okay.
See if I can.
Rick is already dancing on top of the table.
That is another instrument that causes a great deal of interest, I should say, particularly when three of them are together. Now, I don't know if it's possible to bring up 21 on the CD that I bought.
An assertive sound, the krumhorn.
In all of our instruments, there is quite a range. As you know, you have soprano, tenor, alto, and bass in a quartet, usually. In several of our instruments, you will have a Garkline recorder, which is exactly one octave above a soprano recorder.
Oh, wow.
You will have a sopranino. You will have a soprano. the thing that fourth graders play in, this school system in Ames, which is quite an experience when you hear them all playing, supposedly playing the same note. There is an alto. There is a tenor. There is a bass. Mm. And then there's a great bass. Mm. And then there's a contrabass, which is much taller than the performer actually who actually plays it. And the same way with the crumhorns, same way with the hurt and shawmai, they seem to come in families.
The sound of the instrument becomes popular, and then one wants to hear it in many different levels or many different keys.
Well, and also since these instruments were associated with courts and they had a lot of money, our great bass recorder or contrabass recorder costs them today about $4,500. It's become quite expensive. And by the way, the wood that is made is very of the top quality. Sycamore maple, Bubinga from South Africa or South America. The wood is not plastic.
Right.
And that does affect the sound very, very much.
Well, the crumhorn is very beautiful to look at. The wood is beautiful.
Yep, it is. And if they're played in tune, it's quite an interesting sound. In fact, we offer to perform at weddings with the crumhorns, a whole group of crumhorns. And you say, what, that kind of sound at a wedding? And then I have to say, well, if it was good enough for the Duke of Mecklenburg,
okay,
it surely should be good enough for anybody here.
Duke of Mecklenburg.
I cannot imagine here comes the bride on a set of crumhorns. I think there would be a lot of humor, a lot of laughing in the congregation.
So the Duke of Mecklenburg was married to a crumhorn?
No, he had crumhorns at his wedding to play the wedding music. This is authentic.
Thank you.
Who actually made the instruments in the medieval times? Did kings have a musical instrument builder in his court?
I don't know the answer to that question, but probably so, because he would have furniture makers in the court too, and these people would have to have a certain amount of equipment to be able to turn the instruments mm-hmm. and to be able to polish them up. And most of them do not have keys.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have to cross-finger the instrument, mm-hmm. And each instrument is different. Mm-hmm. Even instruments in F major are all different, the fingerings. And so you say, well, how do you remember what fingerings go with what instruments? And that comes from practice. You can pick up the instrument and say, aha, I know who you are, and then do the appropriate fingering and not have to think about it. That becomes a talent, but after a while, it becomes easy to do. Another instrument that is very unusual is the gemshorn, and that is a horn made out of an ox horn, an African ox horn. If you can believe that you can drill holes in this piece of material and get a beautiful sound out of it. We use that during the Christmas Eve service at Collegiate and during the serving of the communion, and it just is a haunting sound. It just fills the entire sanctuary. You say, out of that? And then we do have three or four. Well, actually, we have five of those, and we do play three of them at once. We have a piece, and it stops me.
What else do you have?
An instrument that's called a cornetto. Now, if you...
It's a black instrument?
It looks black, but that's because it's covered with hide, calf's hide.
It looks kind of like the horn of a large steer or something like that.
It does. Since it's called a cornetto, if you've been to Italy, you know in the morning the Italians have a shot of espresso mm-hmm. and a cornetto. And if you look, doesn't this look like a brioche, a pastry that you would eat? And it was the instrument that was used on the top of a choral line in St. Mark's in Venice and other mm-hmm. venues, where it doubled the sopranos and the alto voices. I'll explain the sound of it. It has been said as the sound of a light coming into the sanctuary, coming into the basilica, and enlightening all of those who have been within. And then it has been called also the sound of a castrato.
The sound of a castrato.
Castrato.
What does castrato mean?
A castrato is a castrated male. And if the greatest thing that a parent could do for a child, a young boy who was a good singer, mm-hmm. was to castrate them so that they would retain that high, pure voice,
mm-hmm.
and it goes on into the 17th century, how many of the solo parts of operas were sung by female? No, they were sung by castrati, and they made a lot of money. And so they were the ones who sang in the choruses of the of St. Mark's in Venice. And I think there may be still a few of them around these days, but it's not popular to have a castrato sing a role in a Verdi opera.
This instrument has a very high sound. We're talking with Dr. Carl Bleiley, who is the director of the Musica Antiqua, and we're exploring the stories about the Musica Antiqua and the instruments this morning on Local Talk. Musica Antiqua will be performing on the 16th and the 17th of January, but we just found out that actually the 17th is sold out. Tickets are still available for the 16th of January for the Madrigal Dinner, which is a dinner filled with music and dance held at the fictitious court of King James I, who was a music lover. This is something I found out during this show. And it sounds like it should be a beautiful performance. It's the 50th anniversary of the Madrigal Dinner, which is a tradition at Iowa State, as well as the Musica Antiqua, which is a treasure, fortunate to have, as long as we can, with these people who like medieval and Renaissance music and like strange instruments that are mostly extinct but are being rejuvenated for the sake of the enjoyment of everybody.
What you're hearing really now is a gamba. The gamba is an early cello. And it's the piece, the instrument you hear on the bottom. It's uh-huh. recorded on the top. Okay.
Dr. Bliley, you're the director of the Musica Antiqua, professor at Iowa State University, and you've been describing to us this morning the Musica Antiqua group, its history. It's been around for a long time. Why do you do this?
Why do I do this?
This has been a major force in your life by now. You've been doing it since 1967?
Well, I think I do it just in order to show people totally different types of instruments that were in the Middle Ages and Renaissance. It's an educational experience. Our concerts are. We do a lot of talking and a lot of demonstration of various instruments. And just to see, we play in several school systems for the entire school, and then walking just between and among the kids sitting on the floor in the gymnasium, and just to see their eyes light up and they're learning something, so that's reward enough.
What kind of a response do you get?
Well, they jump up and down. When you put a comb horn right next to their nose, then they look at it and they make this typical gestures that you would expect out of an elementary school person.
What have you learned from doing all this?
What have I learned? I have learned, I think, tolerance and patience in trying to master the many, many different instruments that that we have in our collection.
Some of them are probably quite difficult to play.
They're not difficult in the matter of the different notes, because these instruments are not chromatic. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not easy to play in the key of A major, where you have sharps and flats, because the instruments are not made for those kinds of keys. They're made for the modal structure of a lot of the Renaissance and Middle Ages music. And so you don't have to worry about having all this dental work that you have on a bassoon or mm-hmm. on an oboe, where each note has a different fingering.
Right.
And you have to learn the cross fingerings, but you don't have to worry about chromatics much beyond B-flat and F-sharp. They just don't exist.
If you're a musician, it's kind of an interesting parameter to work within. And within those limitations have quite a bit of variety, right, because of the great variety in the instruments.
It takes a while. But as I say, once you've learned one, you've learned what a basic fingering is. And then the longer you play the instruments, the more you become acquainted with what that instrument is just by the feel of it. No sharps or flats, or very few sharps or flats. Playing basic in the diatonic keys.
And you've been working together with the same people for many years as well. Have you gotten to know each other better over these years as you've performed in these many different venues?
We know what each one is going to be doing. We know that if one person gets off, that the others will keep going and the other person will get back on again. And as I say, we play most of our music from memory. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes things are a little difficult. And the tuning is kind of off as well. I mean, it's not easy to keep the things in tune because they're crude instruments. They're wonderful for the time period, but as far as we look at instruments, they're very, very crude.
Well, we're speaking with Dr. Carl Bleiley. Is there anything that I should have asked you that you would like to mention before we close the show?
I would just say that over the many, many years, we have been blessed with cooperation from the administration at Iowa State University. As I mentioned, President Parks, Dan Zaffirano, Carl Hamilton, they were all very, very supportive. And they, whenever I asked for an instrument, they would at least provide a loan that we could then pay back through performance fees. And so without that support, and also we had the support of Dr. Russell, who was the head of the SNH department, he was a horn player and he enjoyed listening to these various instruments. So we've had fairly decent university support. Now mm-hmm. we are not necessarily associated with universities since mm-hmm. we're all retired. We've done about as much as we want to do, particularly as we get older.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been a real pleasure to hear about this great tradition in Ames. And the Musica Antiqua will be playing at the Madrigal Dinner at Iowa State University on January 16th and 17th, and tickets are still available for the 16th. 17th is sold out. This is going to be the 50th anniversary of the Madrigal Dinner, and apparently a lot of people are coming back to perform and to participate in the celebration. So thank you so much for extending festivities towards KHOI and bringing some of the music here.
You're welcome.
Our hosts today have been myself, Ursula Rudenberg, and Linda Merritt, and Paul Hertz has been here today with us too. He hasn't said anything, but he is actually the person who set up this show and make the arrangements for it. So we thank you, Paul, for doing that. And you can hear a recording of this show on khoyfm.org, where we're also streaming live, so tell your friends. And the show will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today.
Our theme song for Local Talk is Backtrackin' from the Ballad of Kate Shelley. Our engineer has been Richard Morrison.
If you've not already donated to KHOI or become a member, please consider doing so and become part of what is keeping community radio burning bright in Central Iowa. You can donate online at khoyfm.org or come visit us. Our address is on the website. We're in the Ames Pantorium downtown in Ames. Remember, you are what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.